This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our July 24th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you rise above the ranks of the average and become better than average investors. And we try to answer your questions live during the 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. And you can call and get in touch with us at 888-99-CHART, or you can call that same number after hours and leave your message, and we'll answer it on the next show. And we'll go to that in a moment. But today, we're going to talk about what animates the market, even more than earnings and dividends. And we know over the long term, earnings and dividends matter the most. But what matters more in the near term? And I'll give you a hint, it's animal spirits that move the market. So that's one of our talking points today. We're going to discuss that and some in-depth aspects of what really is going to move the market in the next month, 2 months, 12 months. And then what tends to move the market more long-term. Now, one of the lessons you learn as you gain experience investing is not to waste your time. Using your time wisely, and also not to risk your money on shiny objects of no value. And these particular objects can catch the eye of beginning investors, and I'm talking about penny stocks. And a lot of people think that they're cheap, right? They seem like good entry-level investments, or great things that you can earn large returns on in a short period of time. And people think that a stock trading at 10 cents a share is cheaper than a stock trading at $100 a share. And if you understand valuations and fundamentals, you'll know that most $100 stocks are more expensive than 10 cent stocks. And that's something beginning investors tend to learn the hard way. Now, penny stocks are a group of stocks trading usually on what are called pink sheets. Many would-be amateur investors believe that this is where the next big returns really lie, and a place for you to get rich trading stocks. Now, anything trading under $5 a share is typically considered a penny stock. Certainly, trading under $1 a share is considered a penny stock. Now, typically, there's some sort of good story to tell behind these companies. Prospects for the future. And that's really the problem, is that that's all that you're buying is a story. Typically, companies trading this low are at those levels because of poor fundamentals. And a lot of times, the prices are pumped up because of news releases or articles, public comments by insiders, etc. And that drives the story. But there's one simple rule when it comes to penny stocks. It's that you just shouldn't buy them. If you are a value investor, if you understand the risks that are involved, 99 out of 100 of them, probably 999 out of 1,000 of them, are simply stories. And if you do get lucky to make money, that could almost be a worse thing than losing out initially. Because then you'll fall in love with them, you think that's all you need to do, you'll fall in love with the 500% return that you might get, or you might hold it for too long, and it just goes back down to probably where you bought it eventually. And that's how these penny stocks go. So they'll spike up, You might get lucky to hit that winning lotto ticket and it might spike up. But you'd be smart to sell it and move on. Because 999,999 out of a million, don't ever go on to continue those gains on a regular basis. The story tends to wane, and eventually the stock goes back to where it should be based on the fundamentals, meaning the actual business performance of the company. And a lot of them go out of business, or they just sit at a couple cents a share for years. So there are a number of reasons for the rule that you just shouldn't even mess with penny stocks. They don't trade on exchanges, though some might. And the exchanges have compliance rules regarding not only the price of stock, but financial stability of the company, and also disclosures about potential problems with the company. Whereas pink sheet stocks don't really have those rules that protect you. Penny stocks are a lot of times are sold to the unwary, the unsophisticated, the uneducated. They get emails, news reports that talk about the story, the virtues of holding the company. And usually none of the negatives. A lot of times these articles are released by people that have loaded up on the stock at 1 or 2 cents a share. And then they start a campaign, a marketing campaign that drives the stock up to maybe 10 cents a share, 20 cents a share, and then they unload. Think of The Wolf of Wall Street. Remember The Wolf of Wall Street, the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? Talk about it was the late 90s when it was all about the bucket shops, or not the bucket shops, but the call centers you'd call and sell these stories to the unsuspecting investor. Well, in today's world, it's all about technology and email and social media and be able to get that story out. They don't need to make phone calls anymore to the average investor. They just need to get email addresses and get the story out to them. And then guess what? Buy a few shares. You get a few thousand people to buy a few thousand shares in a very illiquid penny stock in their 401k and IRA and brokerage accounts. And suddenly the price starts to rise. So it's even easier than it was when Jordan Belfort was scamming investors in the 90s. So the simple rule is don't buy penny stocks and really do your research. Don't buy into the story. Understand the business prospects of the company, both today and the future. So certainly the story has to do with the future, but today is more important than the story about the future. So when you're buying penny stocks today, most likely you're being caught up in a pump and dump scheme like you saw in the 90s with Jordan Belfort. So the odds of you making anything on a penny stock are as good or worse than winning the lottery. At least in the lottery, you're making millions and millions of dollars. In penny stocks, you might make a few 100% if you're lucky, but the odds are still very, very low. So risk reward is just not there. Now let's get you involved with the discussion now. Your questions or comments come first. So what money matters are on your mind today? Don't save it. Give us a call. We're ready for any money questions at 888-99-CHART. So let's get to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Don from Texas, longtime listener. I have a real estate question. Is it better to continue to maximize my tax-advantaged 401k and HSA accounts and let them continue to compound and minimize my home mortgage payments, or pay down my mortgage by reducing my 401k and HSA contributions and pull money from my retirement accounts? My retirement accounts currently are averaging about 10%, and my home mortgage is at 4%. Thank you, and look forward to your answer.
All right, well, first off, if you have a company match in your 401k, you definitely want to at least do that, the bare minimum. That goes for everybody out there. Paying off your mortgage is certainly a conservative thought process or endeavor. And it's something we encourage all of our clients, all of our listeners to do by the time they retire. I'm not sure how close you are to retirement, but that's certainly a goal that you should look for. I would continue to put money into your 401ks and your tax-deferred accounts and let those grow. I think that's the better choice. But if you're a little bit behind on your mortgage by paying that off by the time you retire, then maybe you want to think about adding to that a little bit. I wouldn't take money out of your 401k or HSA plans because of tax hits potentially. And that's more of an accounting question based on your specific situation. I'm not sure if you're over the age of 59 and a half. So if you aren't, there would be an additional penalty on top of that if you take your money out early. So it's actually 55 in a 401k, 59 and a half in an IRA. But I would definitely wouldn't do that, wouldn't force yourself into kicking or paying taxes on taking money out of those particular vehicles. So I really need some more information. If you want to call our office and discuss that, and it goes with anyone else out there, if you want to talk a little bit more in depth about your situation, that certainly is something we do with a lot of our listeners. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Where the smart money, gold money, is going. High yield income investments. Three ways to mess up index investing. These are some of the topics we talked about on Invest Talk in the last few days. Don't forget to, you can hear archived Invest Talk shows anytime on investtalk.com. And right now, for today's Invest Talk, 8899 chart is how to get through. Let's talk about your money. This hour, we're going to talk about animal spirits that move the market. That's one of my talking points. I also want to discuss the Fed meeting that is coming starting tomorrow, and the announcement will come on Wednesday. The odds are very high that they do nothing since they raised rates last month. But the expectation now is that they will hint at shrinking the balance sheet next, or start the shrinking of the balance sheet next meeting, which would be in September. And so the verbiage around that and the path to reducing their balance sheet will certainly be of interest to the market overall. And that will be of note. So I'll talk about that. Also, if you're selling your home, why an owner might not take the highest bid in today's market, and I'm going to talk about why that is and why that may be smart, depending on the situation and what those bids are. And then lastly, the do's and don'ts for beneficiary designations. This goes with your 401ks, which I'm sure most of you have, or IRAs. There are some habits that a lot of IRA and 401k owners have when it comes to their beneficiary form that maybe they need to rethink. So we're going to discuss that if we have time. But ultimately, I want to know what's on your mind. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. We had the S&P down 2.5, Dow down 67, NASDAQ up 23. Google had earnings after hours. They were disappointing a little bit. Well, I guess you could call it Alphabet now. And it's really, markets, I'm sure, is curious more about the Fed meeting on Wednesday than anything else. But I want to hear from you. 8899 chart is how to get through right now. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. As your own money manager, you'll learn to devote your limited resources to things that with the largest potential for returns. That may be paying down debt, going back to school, or fixing up a house or two. So let's talk about it. 8899 chart is how to get through right now.
This is Steve from New Mexico. Love your show. Have a question about O'Reilly. O-R-L-Y. I bought it when it was in the 200s. I think it was 240. Now it's 180 or 190, and it has come down quite a bit. I have a feeling why it came down, but because of the Amazon and whatnot once again. But can you please tell me whether it's worthwhile for me to hold on to the stocks or maybe buy more at this price, or just get out and buy something else. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
All right, he's looking at O'Reilly Auto Parts, or O'Reilly Automotive, let's say that, is the actual name. And the whole retail sector has gotten hit because of Amazon, like he said, and certain companies are bargains because of it, and others maybe have some more downside to go. Now, analysts are downgrading earnings for this year and next year. You have revenue growth that in 2015 was growing at right around the 10% mark. And last quarter was only up 3%. Earnings were up 9% last quarter, whereas in 2015 it was growing in the 20% range. So you're seeing the growth decelerate. And once again, this is another example of something that was trading at elevated valuation levels in the 200s. And once growth slows, like you see now, you're getting that PE, not expansion, but contraction, right? So when growth is high, PEs expand. When growth slows, PEs contract. And that's really what you're seeing now for the most part. And the main reason why it is dropping is because of that reduction in growth. Now, the technicals are certainly weak, and they look like they're only going to get weaker, to be honest with you. I don't have a strong support level till probably around the 150 range is probably the next major support level. And if you look at the valuation, you have an operating earnings yield of about 9.5, which is very strong. So that's certainly solid. Enterprise value to EBITDA is now under 10, which is good, but not, I would say, great. But it is near kind of the longer term low for the particular stock, and that's what we like to look at. What do particular companies tend to trade at? And it is trading near that low. So it is, from a valuation standpoint, it has become relatively attractive. I wouldn't say it's a screaming buy at these levels, but long term, it's still looking, it's looking now attractive at these levels, whereas, you know, in the 200s, it was certainly a little bit overvalued. So there is a little bit more downside, but I think you've hit a lot of it. You've hit most of it. So if you have a long-term time horizon, I'm okay with it to hold. But if you have a short-term time horizon and you're worried about it going down to maybe another 20, 30 bucks or so, and that would scare you out, and then I would probably sell it, because I do think it will get down there. I don't think it's quite hit a fever pitch for O'Reilly Automotive. But it's starting to get on my watch list long, long term. Let's go to James in Reno. How you doing, James?
Hey, yes, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Hey, question. As far as, I'd like to tech trade about 10% of my portfolio, my retirement portfolio. And I love learning about all the technical tools and oscillators and studying them. But my one question, the one thing I have a problem with is screening for stocks. I've tried Thrive, I've tried different ideas and other tools out there. And I'm curious what you guys have any favorites about too much.
You have a radio on in the background or anything?
No, that's somebody else. I heard that when I was sitting on hold.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So you said you were trying to find out what we use, right?
Well, what you recommend? Yeah, what you recommend? Because I use FinViz. Yes, and freestockcharts.com. That's a pretty good tool. Mm-hmm. Thinkorswim is pretty complicated. And then there's one called Trade Ideas that uses AI. It's pretty expensive. It's like $99 a month. A little bit over the top. I took it for a test drive. But I'm just looking for something that I can, you know, screen in an affordable way to kind of screen for possible, you know, trades based on my criteria for a technical trade.
Yeah, technical trades are very difficult. I mean, that's something that, you know, it's an art. It's an art. You know, it's not a science. Technical trades are certainly about understanding pattern and price and support levels. timing as well, because there are timing mechanisms and patterns. And that's something you just need to learn over time and have somebody good that knows what they're doing. There's really not a great, I know of, a great tool on the technical side. There's certainly things that you can use to find momentum and certain basic basic indicators of strength and weakness of a particular stock. But if you're talking strictly technical, meaning chart indicators, I'm not a fan of anything out there. We use our experience and knowledge over time to understand those patterns. So I can't really give you a sense on that. We use Y charts as a great, it's paid. I think it is $100 a month, maybe more. And that's what we use for fundamental screening. Thanks for the call, James. Now we're at the halfway mark. Plenty of time to get your question into the program. Our financial advisor, Justin Klein, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our InvestTalk podcast continues. One of KPP Financial's solutions that help solve today's retirement puzzle is our balanced income portfolio. How do you get the income you need in retirement without the kind of risk that you don't feel comfortable with? That's what this program is all about. The Balanced Income Portfolio from KPP Financial. And remember, as with each KPP program, the principles at KPP are invested right along with you. Would you like to know more about it? The Balanced Income Portfolio? You can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts, or you can ask Steve about it directly. Just click on the Contact Steve button on investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. InvestTalk continues on a service of KPP Financial, unencumbered by large corporate mentality, able to respond to today's fast-paced market, and investing right along with their clients. KPP Financial, independent thinking, shared success. Our listener line is open 24 hours a day, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Glenn in Pleasanton. How are you doing, Glenn?
Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. What can I do for you?
I'm just curious of your opinion on Blackstone BX. I read that it looks like a good dividend, long hold type of stock, and I was wondering what you thought.
Okay. Well, Blackstone is an alternative asset manager. It includes investment vehicles focused on private equity, real estate, hedge fund solutions, non-investment grade credit, and secondary funds. So it is an asset manager in areas that are very, let's say, very risky. Dividend yield is currently 10% going forward, which sounds great, but they, looking long term, they tend to have very volatile earnings. In 2011, they lost 35 cents a share, and then they made some money. They brought it up to 258 in 2014, then that fell to $1.04 in 2015. So you can see that their business is all over the board. They lost $4.32 in 2008, another $2.46 in 2009. So it's extremely cyclical. And I honestly think this is a very, very high risk dividend payer. That 10% is certainly not sustainable long term, unless the business cycle just doesn't ever go down, which I don't think that's going to be the case. So from a valuation perspective, I also don't think it's particularly cheap, so that's why I'm just not a big fan of Blackstone.
Very good. Thank you. I was looking around and I saw it on a top 10 dividend stock, pick or whatever. So I was just curious your opinion. Thank you.
Not for me. If I'm looking for high risk income, sure. And you don't think the market or the economy is going to turn over relatively in the near term, then, it might stay up for a while. But it's had a run and I don't think that dividend is sustainable. So I'm not a fan of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks, Glenn. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 20 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, probably do it now. Now, animal spirits are what drives the stock market. You know, we talk about how long-term earnings and dividends are really what matters. But in the near term, I'm talking short to medium term, what's going to be most important are the emotional ebb and flow and cycle of investors. And what we call animal spirits and what the Fed calls animal spirits. You know, they printed trillions of dollars in order to inflate asset prices. They said this. And create animal spirits in the market, in the economy, and create a wealth effect. And that is what they succeeded at. So when you're looking at the performance of a particular investment or asset class, and you're looking at what happened in the last year, two, 3 years, what you have to understand is the odds are animal spirits had a lot more to do with the change in price or the performance of that particular investment than the underlying fundamentals, the earnings and the dividends. And I think that's key. It's very important to really have that perspective. Now, if you're looking over 10, 15, 20 years or more, then you're talking more about the fundamentals of the economy, in particular businesses. And so expectations and emotions, and when I say expectations, typically we're talking about stories here. Right? We talked about retail and the expectations that Amazon is going to take over the retail landscape. And that's the story. And other retailers are up you know what creek without a paddle. And that's the expectations. That's the story. And your job as an investor, as a value investor, is to weed out the emotions and understand what the reality is compared to expectations. Maybe expectations are accurate. Maybe they are inaccurate. More often, they're inaccurate. It's just a matter of to what degree. And this is what drives the market, drives bubbles, drives crashes, drives the emotions of the of the market. So if you keep that in mind, then you can avoid loading up on single stocks or single asset classes, single funds at the wrong time. Now, it's difficult to know when to buy and sell simply by looking at upward momentum of earnings and technical analysis of stock prices. Can be done, but it takes a lot of skill and knowledge and experience over the long term. And the narrative behind a particular story or economic trend really can often mislead the average investor. So your goal is to ignore the story about stocks and why the market is up and down. Invest for the long term and hopefully ignore the noise. And don't watch CNBC, please. Now let's get back to our 24-hour listener line. Pick up a question at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Tim from Rochester, New York. I'm a longtime podcast listener, first-time caller. I currently hold Teva shares within my Fidelity 401k that has brokerage link. And I noticed that every time a Teva dividend is paid, I am paying a small foreign tax credit. I figure this is because Teva is an ADR. And I always assumed that, you know, with a 401k, you would only ever be taxed upon withdrawal. But since I'm paying taxes on this dividend, I'm wondering if I should not hold Teva within my 401k. I always have my dividends automatically reinvested, so it feels like I'm paying tax on part of the growth. So any insight you can provide would be much appreciated, and I'll listen for you on the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Great question. It's a small detail that can be important over the long term and to consider when you're investing in ADRs of foreign companies like Teva, who is headquartered in Israel. And certain countries, I believe like England, has an agreement with the U.S. where there's not that foreign tax. And there's other countries where there is some sort of foreign tax on it, right? Because think about the country that the company is headquartered in. They're making profits, and part of those profits are passed on to shareholders. And if those shareholders aren't citizens of that particular country, then it makes it difficult for the country to get a piece of that pie, right? Every country out there wants a piece of the pie of the companies that are operating within their borders. So that's how they tend to get it. And you would think Israel would have some sort of agreement with us, but they do not. And now on a taxable account, that foreign tax paid is actually, you can write that off in your taxes. Whereas within a tax deferred account like an IRA or a 401k, you cannot. So that is one little downside of holding foreign dividend paying companies in tax deferred accounts, is you have to adjust for that taxes paid. And you know, it's usually not taking up a large portion of that dividend. For example, Teva earns 3.6%. That's their dividend rate. That's gross. That's not net of the foreign taxes. I'm not sure exactly what that is off the top of my head, what that percentage is. But you're going to pay it if you are owning Teva and you're getting that dividend. So it's one of those small little details that you need to consider. It wouldn't put me off from owning foreign companies in taxable accounts, but it's something to consider and be aware of if you do or are thinking about having that in your tax deferred accounts. Okay, so hope that answered your question and gave everyone out there a little more insight to what that means for your tax deferred account. Now, there's no excuse for not reviewing your retirement plan with a professional. Most will do it for free. And as time allows, Steve schedules a few hours a month to look over documents, have a conversation about their life situation, and make some suggestions. Now, it can't really happen, you know, it can really happen anywhere. And Steve does this via Skype or FaceTime or telephone. I know I did one with a listener last week. I did a Skype call, or I think it was a FaceTime call. But you can also reserve your hour with Steve by just going to investtalk.com and clicking on the Invest Talk tab. And then portfolio review. It is free, no obligations, and is a service of KPP Financial.
There are so many ways that you can make serious missteps in buying or selling your home. And of course, your home is an important element in your retirement portfolio. That's why KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff. Have questions about real estate? Send it directly to Justin. Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hi, thank you. I have a question, and I was wondering if now would be a good time to pick up some AT&T. The dividend is getting quite high on that. It's always nice to have extra money 4 times a year. So if you could let me know, and this is Penny. I'm calling from Arizona, and I will be listening to your program to get the answer. So thank you very much for all your help throughout all these years. Bye-bye.
All right, she's looking at AT&T. I don't think I need to explain who AT&T is for everybody. Certainly declined in price pretty heavily over the past year or so. It's down from a high of, what's that, $44, call it $43.50 or so. It's down about 17% from its high, 52-week high at least. And it now yields 5.4% going forward. But the main reason it's declined is because of the fierce competition within the wireless industry from T-Mobile and Sprint and trying to tackle the two juggernauts, which are AT&T and Verizon. And Verizon's down, I believe, even more from its 52-week high. That's down about 22% from its 52-week high. AT&T off 16.7. Its revenue now is down 3% year over year last quarter. But earnings are still rising very slowly, about 2% year over year. We actually recently picked this up for our balanced income program. Could there be a little more downside? I think possible. But we like the dividend and we're focused more long-term. 5.5%, like you said, is pretty juicy for us and our clients. So we like it down here. I would love it at 33. Love it at 33. Will it get down there? I am not quite sure, but that's where I would love it. We like it here at 36, and we love it at 33. And the reason we like it over Verizon is because of a lower debt level. Verizon has a lot of debt, and so we preferred AT&T over Verizon. Now let's stay with our listener line and catch up on some of your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name's AJ from Danville, California. Just wanted Steve to talk through two ETFs that I want to know more about since it's high income. YYY is the first symbol and SDIV is the second. Just want to understand the risks for each of these. They seem fairly diversified in their portfolio. Just wanted to see how they'd hold up and what his thoughts of how they'd hold up in a harsher environment. All right, thank you.
All right. Looking at yield share high income, that's YYY. I'm not sure how long it's been around for. Take a look. Get a longer chart here. Okay, so it's been around since about 2012, so you didn't see it go through the last financial crisis, so that's something to consider. Certainly high risk. 17% U.S. stocks, 5% non-U.S. stocks, 71% in bonds. Let's see what the bond holdings are. Kind of opaque. High fees of 1.7%. Yields about 9%. Is there any leverage on this? I would be very interested to see the leverage on YYY. It's already gone down from about 30, let's say, call it 23, to 16, rallied from there. So this is certainly high risk. If you're okay with that high risk, I would need to dig into that a little bit more to understand what type of leverage that they might have, what exposure they have to the bond market. I would imagine that they are also investing in junk-related bonds, and that's certainly something I would want to dig into a little bit more, what that rating is. And then SDIV. I'm trying to bring that up here. Oh, I don't like this one. Same thing, but this is more equity, all equity-focused, certainly very high yield, very expensive. So I don't like either of these. Too risky for me. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'd love to hear from you before the hour's up at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Jacob from Champaign, Illinois. Thanks for everything you do on your show. I've learned so much from you in the last 6 months. I wanted to ask a few questions about bonds today. When the Feds raise the rates as they have done this year, and you say they probably will continue to do, what does that look like for bonds? The price and yield of government bonds goes down. Is that correct? And does that mean that corporate bonds are more sought after right now because their interest rates stay the same? Also, can you explain why the rates are so much lower now than they were 30 years ago? I looked at a chart since 81 and it amazed me how high these bonds used to be. If it continues on the same trend, it looks very unattractive to buy government bonds. Thanks for your time and I'll wait for your response on the podcast.
All right, great question. Well, the price of bonds and the yield on a bonds are inversely related, okay? So if the Fed raises rates in general, that's going to bring the price of government bonds down because the existing payout is now inferior to what it was before they raised rates, right? Before of new issues, okay? So that That does make corporate bonds more attractive, but not in the way that you described it. Corporate bonds are more attractive because the fact that they yield more means that they tend to have less interest rate risk, because when they pay out their interest rate or their interest, it's more money and it's able to reinvest at a higher rate, whereas government bonds have paid such low interest that you reinvest that the amount you get semi-annually is less and able to invest. I know it's complicated, can be hard to explain, but basically bond prices and interest rates are inversely related. Now, that doesn't happen in when they raise rates. It's going to be built into the market, so understand that as well. These things don't happen on a dime. The market prices that in as they see changes coming in the future. So be aware of that. I'm trying to remember what else this question was. I think that should be it. Forgot the rest of it. Sorry. Sorry if I didn't answer the whole thing, but yeah, that hopefully gives you some clarity on how bond prices are affected. Oh, I know what it was. Long-term interest rates have been going down. The reason they've been going down is because of the Federal Reserve, right? Every time that their mantra is to, every time we have a recession, you lower interest rates to lower than they were before. And that inflates asset prices, get those animal spirits going again. And one of the reasons why you saw a massive bull market from the early 80s into 2000 is that constant pressure on interest rates getting lower and lower and lower by Greenspan and the Federal Reserve. And that's one reason why Greenspan was touted as some market genius, when in reality, all he did was just lower interest rates even lower than they were during the last recession, and that brought things back to where they needed to be, got credit growth going. And now that's why we're having difficulty today with the economy and getting it juiced. It's simply because of the Fed's out of rope, and that's why they had to do QE. And I think they're going to continue to try to do that. And yes, government bonds are very unattractive long-term. Typically, interest rates have a cycle, 30 years up, 30 years down, and we're now past the end of those 30 years. So interest rates will be rising, and that will be negative for the bond market overall, asset prices overall. You won't likely see asset price inflation over the next 30 years like you saw over the last 30 years, and that goes for real estate to stocks to bonds, etc. So hope that gives you a little clarity. Now, speaking of that, let's talk quickly about the Federal Reserve meeting that's starting tomorrow, and the announcement will come on Wednesday. The Fed is largely expected to not raise rates, but announce some sort of unwind of its balance sheet starting in September. They won't raise rates likely until December, as long as the start of that unwind goes well in September. So, despite the fact that inflation CPI numbers are down, they're at 1.7%, which is in June, which is down from 2.3% in January, even though the jobless rate is at almost a 16-year low. So, a lot of economists are cautioning the Fed, cautioning that they're tightening at the wrong time because inflation and economic prospects are decelerating some. But I think the Fed will continue to tighten monetary policy as long as the markets stay up. Time for our hour is up. Be sure to sign up for our free InvestTalk Insider program. Lots of good information and recorded webinars as well. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and for Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family. Thanks for being with us. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors,
Call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.